Welcome back to the Profitable Audience Podcast, where we teach you how to build and monetize your online business. So both Tony and I, we got started with our online businesses over a decade ago, and things have changed a lot in the past 10 years. So we thought that it'd be an interesting exercise to talk about what we would do differently today if we were to start all over again. So Tony, let's actually start back in the beginning. I'm actually curious what you're going to say about this. Would you have gone to college?
Oh, wow. We're going way back.
We are, yes.
Okay. Would I have gone to college? I think I would have gone to college just because in my family, not a lot of people went to college. Mm-hmm. And like my siblings did, like before my siblings, like we're kind of the first ones to go. So I think it was more of a, it's not a status thing. It was more of just a, felt like it was important to do thing. Like my dad, I think, was one of the first people in his whole family to go to college. So I think I probably would have gone just because of that, but I would have probably gotten a different degree.
I mean, do you use your degree at all today?
No, I have a degree in political science. No.
Okay. So not at all.
I'm a fun person to hang out with on election night. That's about it.
Aren't you going to ask me that same question?
Yeah, but I feel like yours is so different because you actually have a useful degree. I don't have a useful degree.
Even if I didn't have a useful degree, I'd be going because I'd be the only Asian not to go to college.
Really?
From anyone that I know, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there a lot of pressure to go to college?
There's no pressure. There's no pressure at all, actually. You're just going. There's no choice.
So that's pressure.
That's not pressure. There's just no choice.
Okay. I didn't have any pressure to go. I mean, I would say no pressure. I mean, I think there was just an assumption. I was a good student, so there was an assumption that I would go to college, but there wasn't a you better go to college or else kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I figured that I'd come out with at least a practical degree, and I'd wanted to do engineering since birth. So I would definitely go back. I would probably still pursue my engineering degree because I think it's helped a lot with my online businesses.
Yeah, I think if I were to do it all over again, I would probably still go, but I would probably get a degree in something like psychology or sociology. Also useless degrees, but I think more helpful in the world that I'm in today.
Yeah, I don't think psychology is useless, actually.
It's not so there's like different types of degrees, right? If you go to college and you get a degree in accounting, you probably will get out of college and get a degree as an accountant, or if you get a teaching degree. But if you go and get a degree in like art history or psychology, something like that, you probably have to go on and get more schooling in order to have some sort of employment that's
well, that's assuming you want to get a job, but
yeah, I mean, that's kind of a thing too.
Well, this is that's the point of this question, actually. So if you were to start all over again, knowing what you were going to do, would you have just focused on your online businesses like right out of high school?
Yeah. Or? Yeah.
Okay. You would have.
Probably.
Interesting. Okay. I still would not have, but.
Yeah. I probably would have still gone to college, but probably would have done something like taken a couple classes at a time and done it more for personal development. So I would have taken classes in like things that I'm interested in, right? Like I probably would have taken some construction classes or marketing, like all the different things that I'm interested in. I probably would have found some degree that I could take a bunch of different things and do that as opposed to going for a couple years in a row and focusing on one specific topic that's totally useless.
So given that things have changed a lot, you got started before I did, right? You started in what, 2007, I want to say?
2006.
Yeah. So I started the e-commerce store in 2007, not the blog until 2009. If you were to start back all over again, would you have taken the same path? Or because you've done e-commerce store as well, and you've done a bunch of other things.
I think I would have stayed. There's a lot of things I wanted to I would change, but I think I would have probably stayed on the same basic path. Not doing e-commerce right away. I think but it's funny because I started with eBay, right, in 1999, which is similar to e-commerce.
Yeah.
Or whatever, I think it was 99. So I started with e-commerce, I guess, like that was my first job. That was actually my first job, the way to make money was I did eBay for 2 years. But I think going into like traditional e-commerce after I had been blogging for almost 10 years was pretty helpful because a lot of the thing I think when you go into e-commerce, it's very overwhelming because there's the whole like product side, but there's also the whole marketing side. And if you aren't familiar with either of those, that can be super overwhelming to try to learn all of that as you're going. And so I didn't have to learn any of the marketing side of it. I just had to learn the product side. And so I'm kind of glad that I had the marketing from the blog when I got started in e-commerce.
Oh, that's interesting. So I guess with eBay, you don't really, you still need to know a little bit about marketing, right?
I mean, but it's basically writing great descriptions and things like that. And back when I was doing eBay, I mean, you're not running Facebook ads to eBay or doing, I mean, there wasn't social media back then. So it was more about just finding the right types of items and to list and sell and resell and things like that. But you did eBay too back in
the day. Yeah, we actually did eBay for about a year. I think we did eBay in all of 2006. I actually even had like this whole eBay operation going where I was hunting on Craigslist for electronics. Like I would buy these PCs, I would break them apart, sell the parts. And I think it got up to about $1,500 a month until I realized that I could have gotten killed or kidnapped.
Well, you have to meet in a safe part of town. That's how it works.
Yeah, I was going to these really sketchy neighborhoods.
That's where you get the, are you sure the computers were legit?
They were like, we got PCs, we got hard drives, we got graphics cards.
Guy had a big trench coat on.
Hey, you want this car? I'll give you this car.
Okay, but do you think that the eBay, you doing eBay, because I think the eBay helped me a little bit with e-commerce because of the just the writing descriptions and things like that. But do you think your experience with eBay helped you at all in starting Bumblebee, or do you think there wasn't any crossover?
I don't think there was much crossover. Yeah. Like eBay, we would literally just take a photo, write a little description, and just list it. And that was it.
Yeah, there's not really any work with eBay either. They have the whole platform set up for you.
And I want to say that it gave me a false sense of confidence, actually.
Really?
When we launched our store, I was like, okay, well, all I got to do is throw up a product and see what happens. And our initial plan was to actually drive traffic from eBay over until I discovered that that was illegal. But yeah.
Oh, is it illegal?
Of course. It's like Amazon. You're not allowed to drive people off.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You're not even allowed to mention, like I was going to mention my product, the URL and all that stuff in the description and say something like, hey, you can get a deal. Like we'll give you a discount if you actually buy.
Well, that's where eBay came in handy for you. You learned all the, I'll make you a deal tactics
from picking up the black market
computer stuff though, right? You learned all the shadiness from where you were buying your computers.
Yeah, probably. I mean, there's one time it was definitely stolen. Because it was just a bunch of cords like cut, like it was really sketchy. And it was out of this big moving van. So I thought I was going to die. I actually didn't even want to buy it, but I felt like if I didn't buy it, they'd just throw me in the van.
I don't even know what to say to you about all of this.
I stopped concerned for
the people that shopped from you on eBay. But so I got started with the blogging. I'm glad that I started that first and then moved to e-commerce, but you got started with e-commerce and then moved into blogging, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I want to talk about what we would do today. So you would still go the same path?
Like wait 10 years to start e-commerce? Probably.
Well, no, that's not what I'm... Yeah, you would. Okay. Yeah. So you wouldn't start e-commerce first, but when you first started, was your plan to make money right away?
With blogging? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Okay.
I didn't know how to make money, but I knew that there were bloggers making money. And I think we talked about this on another podcast. I was following people like JD Ross and 5 Cent Nickel and a couple of those financial bloggers. And I knew that they were making money because they talked about it on their websites, but I didn't have any understanding of how that worked.
All right. So we're using blogging as like content creation, as a synonym for content creation right now. So would you do it differently? Would you still be writing the entire time, or would you focus more on video and whatnot today if you were still over?
If I was to start all over, there's two things that pop out to me that I would change. And that is I did video early on, but I would have done more video and I would have focused more on it because those old videos that I have still get traffic and they're not good. And the other thing I would have focused on, which we talk about in almost every podcast, is email marketing.
In terms of video though, which platforms, like what would be your strategy today?
If I was getting started today, so when I was doing video when I got started or a couple years after I got started, what I would do is I would record kind of the same thing I do now, right? Do recipes or kitchen tips, and I would just record them and I wouldn't do live or anything like that because I don't think live existed. And I would just upload them to YouTube and then I would embed the videos on my blog. But I never drove anybody to YouTube. I never talked about subscribing to my channel. I never did anything like that. I was just using the video as a tutorial, like an easy way to make a tutorial rather than doing step-by-step photos. I would have been way more focused on building a YouTube channel because if I would have started building the YouTube channel seriously in like 2009, 2010, I'd probably have a million subscribers today.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So if you were to start today though, so you would go with YouTube then, I guess?
Yeah, I would go with YouTube and I would probably still do, I would do the lives like I do now because I just think that's a good way. The live to me is a different thing. The live to me is a way to get to know your community. The YouTube video, I think, is more of a business path as far as traffic, SEO, monetization, possibly things like that.
I know for most people, video is kind of intimidating, and it's really hard for you to kind of extrapolate back. But would you just record on your phone and that's it?
That's what I did. Equipment? Yeah.
Well, no, I mean today, like if you're a Starlover, same thing.
Yeah, I would probably just record on my phone. Because I think there's also a difference today with video. There's a couple different types of video creators. There's people that, like kind of what you're doing right now, where you have heavily edited videos that are filmed on a SLR camera, mm-hmm. and they look great, but that's what you're teaching. You're doing like 10 tips or 6 tips or things like that. I'm in my kitchen or I'm doing a craft. And so my audience needs to see like the genuineness, because if it looks too polished in a craft or a kitchen video, what they're going to think is, I can't do that. I don't have the ability to make this. This is too difficult, right? It's too polished. It's like watching a Food Network show versus watching someone do a tutorial on YouTube. And so for me, I think the less professional it looks, the more believable it is.
I don't think anyone would think that making peanut butter jelly sandwiches is that difficult.
Well, I mean, when you're cutting them into shapes, come on.
So for me, actually, if I were to start all over again, I might start a SaaS business. And let me talk about why. I feel like now that I have kids and everything, I think doing any sort of software or hardware business is a little risky because it requires a lot more capital. Whereas back when I was single or no kid, I wouldn't have to be single, but with no kids, and I had more time to experiment, I probably would have gone that route earlier on.
Why do you think that is?
It's just something I've always wanted to do, right? I have this tech background. The things I do now, e-commerce, content creation, teaching classes and that sort of thing, it doesn't really leverage what I studied.
What you went to school for?
Well, it's not necessarily what I went to school for, but it's like what I like doing, right?
Right.
You like finishing furniture. I like random coding projects. Like this past Black Friday when PayPal went down. So what happened was, PayPal deprecated their API, or you know, the way the shopping cart interacts with PayPal. They decided to do it in September. I actually didn't catch it until Black Friday when everyone was complaining that PayPal was down. So I had to recode something pretty much in a day to get PayPal back up and running again, because it's an important payment processor for our store. And I really enjoyed it. I literally did not leave this office. I went down just to scarf down some food, came back up and kept coding, but I kind of missed those days.
So it's more for you about... It's not necessarily a money thing. It's more of a personal fulfillment.
It's a personal fulfillment thing. And I sincerely believe that software or SaaS companies have a much higher multiple later on if you were to decide to sell it.
Yeah.
Whereas the businesses I have now, Bumblebee is very sellable, but My Wife Quit Her Job probably isn't nearly as sellable. Maybe from an affiliate marketing perspective, but definitely the course is not sellable.
Right. So for you, it's sort of that double-edged, it's personal fulfillment, something that you've always wanted to do, plus... It's more of a future bet because you could sell. You probably
it's more long-term thinking. I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if anyone's listening to this, really it comes down to what your personality is, right? If you feel like you need to make money now, I think I'd still would have gone the e-commerce route.
Mm-hmm.
I think. But if you're really young and you have a long runway, I might try something that had the potential to go much bigger than it is. I mean, e-commerce can still go big and so can content, but not in the 9-figure big.
Right. But let's talk about, you said, if you're young.
We're not young, Tony. I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
But because you and I both know a lot of people who are on, I like to call like the second act. They had a good career. They had a job that they liked, but either they got burned out or they had a physical situation where they needed to like not be as travel as much or something like that. And now they're trying to find a new career and maybe they're 45. So you're saying that would not be something that you would recommend for someone who doesn't have a long runway?
It depends on what you value, right? So if family is one of your top priorities, then starting a software company or a large company with the potential to make a lot of money probably isn't going to be in the cards, because you're going to be sacrificing your family, is all I'm saying.
Okay.
Right. I mean, a lot of people, I think the average Silicon Valley founder who's successful I think the average age is 45 actually, but I'm willing to bet that they're not home all that often.
Well, and they probably have also been doing this for like 15 years, right?
Yeah, that's true.
They've probably been in different SaaS companies. And now they either they work themselves into a position where they could start their own, or they've just started multiple companies. I agree with you. It seems like the people that we meet or that we hear of who are in the SaaS business started it at 22 or 23.
Yeah, because SaaS businesses don't really catch on until, I want to say, like 5 to 10 years later.
Yeah. I can say I would never do that.
I gathered that. Right. Well, actually, you could lead it. I mean, you wouldn't be the one coding it.
Right. But I think that's a distinct advantage for you and other people that have had successful SaaS businesses, is that usually when they get started, it's them and maybe a developer or one or two people, and they have the knowledge to do some of the hard work in, as far as building it. It's not just someone who's like, I have an idea and I'm going to hire all these people to get started. I mean, some people do it that way, of course, but we know a lot of people who in the beginning were basically working on it with two or three people.
Yeah, I guess that's assuming you're bootstrapped. I mean, you can pull it off if you're a really good product person, and that's actually the hardest part, right? Just defining what the features you need and right. what the interface should look like. I mean, to be honest with you, the engineering part is, it's almost like you're a grunt, right? Like you're given this blueprint and you just go do it, right? I mean, I was treated like a grunt sometimes at my last job too, for certain things. All you need is a co-founder that can code or something. And as long as you have a good idea, you can bootstrap it for a little bit until later on. And I think you actually need to either get some amount of outside funding, because it requires a lot more money to start.
Yeah. I think one of the downsides of a SaaS product as well is that until you hit that, so there's the beginning where you're getting started and you're probably working 80 hours a week on it. And then it takes a long time, as you said, like a long runway to get to the point where you have that freedom. But then at that point, do you have the freedom? You have a lot of freedom. You have a couple businesses, a lot of them run on autopilot. You have a lot of afternoons free. You have tons of time with your kids. If you were in charge of a SaaS operation right now, you probably would not, you'd probably be working a 9-to-5, because even though the development might be done on a SaaS product, now you have to manage 100 people, right? Or you're the president of a company that has 100 people. So I think that's, to me, that's not super appealing to be in charge of a bunch of people. This was another reason why that wouldn't be something, because I've worked on SaaS products before and you know, that part doesn't seem like what the one reason why I love like the content creation and video podcasting, everything is that it allows me and you to kind of do what we want to do. And we set our own schedule. So if we want to work on Saturday night, that's fine. And if we want to take off a Monday, we can do that as well. And I think you don't necessarily have that freedom when you start building a really large company.
Yeah. I think anytime you have employees or mouths to feed, then it gets a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
Right. And in e-commerce land, I guess it's less of a lifestyle business than a content creation site.
Right. But we know a lot of e-commerce people that like all their inventory either goes direct to a 3PL or Amazon. They don't ever touch it. They're able to travel and do things. They just need to have a computer.
Yeah. I mean, but behind the scenes, right, there's a lot more that can go wrong.
For
right?
sure.
A shipment goes bad or whatnot. And then before you know it, you're in this panic. Like when recently our ship got damaged and a whole bunch of containers on the ship basically collapsed. So we didn't get some of our inventory in time for the holidays. And so we went out of stock on that. Stuff like that, when it happens, is very stressful. Whereas with content, what's the worst that could happen? I guess your website went down.
Yeah. I mean, or you get hacked, I guess, would be the two things.
You get hacked or a service has gone down, like your email marketing service or something like that.
Yeah. Which also happened on, what day did that happen last
week? Oh, yeah. That happened on the day before Black Friday.
Yeah.
Email provider went down.
So nothing's perfect. But I think your SaaS idea brings up a point that when I look back and think like, what would I do different if I was getting started? I think the thing that sticks out to me the most is that don't sleep on your ideas. I think about some of the ideas I had 10 years ago or 11 years ago that I was just like, I don't know, too complicated, or I don't want to try to figure that out, which if I had like decided to do them, I'd probably just be retired right now. Right. If I would have just
like what?
Take it. So when Instagram first came out, that, you know, you can't, there's nothing clickable in Instagram, right? We were, you know, a lot of the bloggers were using it. And I said, this is super annoying. No one can click through to your website. I was like, wouldn't it be cool if you could like create this link and have it in your profile? And then it could go to like a page that pulled all your blog feed up and like all your content up, and it could like easily drive people. And then of course, a year later, LinkedIn Profile came out and Linktree and all those things. There's been a couple things like that I've thought, oh, I should do this or I should do that. And I just was like, oh, it's kind of complicated. And I didn't do it. And then it comes, someone else does it, because it's not super original. I'm just trying to solve a problem for somebody, or usually myself. And I think I think I see that a lot with people where they have a good idea and they just don't do it for whatever reason. And then they probably miss out on a big opportunity.
How come you're not telling me about these ideas?
I don't think I knew you when this happened. I actually didn't know you. It's Instagram, when Instagram came out. It's a long time ago.
Well, I'm just saying in general, like if you have these ideas.
Yeah, no, I will now. You can start your SaaS product with my idea.
Yeah. Okay, Steve, you do all the work and I'm going to take 50%. Okay.
I'm a really good product person. I am. I excel at user testing.
But I think if you have a family and that's your focus, I think either e-commerce or content is probably less of a maintenance. Once it's up and running, it's less work. Whereas e-commerce will probably make you money a little bit faster.
Yeah.
So as a family, like if I had my kids and I'm going to start all over again, I would still probably go the e-commerce route until I generated enough money where I was comfortable. And then I'd probably go in all in content. I probably wouldn't change the formula that I went through.
Yeah. And what do you have anything looking back that you wish outside of doing something SaaS early on? Like, let's just say you're in the beginning Bumblebee and my wife quit. Is there anything outside of email marketing that we both regret not doing sooner? Is there anything else that you can see or you look back and say, I wish I would have done this?
Aside from building like a list?
Yeah.
I think I was a little too ambitious early on. And I think this derailed my efforts. Like I burned myself out with my site early on. And then that actually made me take this break where I just didn't want to have anything to do with it for a while.
Really? When was this?
Yeah. This was when I was writing every single day of the week.
That the phase that you were in for a month?
Yeah.
I just edited that podcast. That's what made me.
Oh, you did? Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was for a month. Yeah. I was like, okay, I don't want to do this ever again.
Yeah.
So I dropped down. So I think you got to keep your goals realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, if they're totally unrealistic, then that's the easiest way to just kind of burn yourself out when you don't meet your expectations.
And what were you thinking when you were you just doing the one day a week because that was
once a day? Well, the more the better, right?
Right.
And today I would still maintain once a week. Actually, everything I do is once a week because that's what I'm willing to maintain. That's actually the main reason why I haven't really done social media yet, because social media requires actually multiple times a day at least once a day, right?
At least once a day, for sure.
At least once a day. And that's like a lot of pressure. Like, what if I don't want to do anything that day?
I don't ever have that day. So I don't know what that's like.
Well, you're not on social media every day though.
I mean, I guess I'm not posting on social media every day.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Cause it takes work, right? I mean, you got to find like Instagram, for example, you got to find a photo and then the caption that you write has to be a little bit clever if you want to be to succeed. And that's like writing a mini blog post in a way.
Yeah. And I think that's definitely initially Instagram wasn't that way, but now it's all about the caption and it takes a lot more thought than back, you know, in 2013 when I was Instagram pictures of my shoes.
I mean, I really value my time. Like I like to look at my calendar and see it completely blank. That actually makes me, I don't like being tied down to certain times. And so
How do we work together?
Well, do you like your calendar full when you look at it?
I don't like it full, but I want things to be at certain times for sure.
Well, no, I want things to be at certain times, but I like to see it empty.
My calendar's never, I don't know what that feeling is either. Come on.
Well, if you didn't have all those kids, it would be emptier, right?
I know. Their fault.
Like how much of your calendar is your stuff?
I mean, during the day, like from nine to three, it's my stuff for the most part. But there's always interruptions.
Wait, so you put your stuff on a calendar, like what you need to work on?
Sometimes, yeah. So don't forget.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. I don't do that.
I'll start sending you invites. They're mostly about you.
I mean, the way I operate is I have this like task list that needs to get done. It's like, okay, I will do that one today.
Okay. But there's some of them are time sensitive.
If they're time sensitive, obviously there's three buckets, right? There's time sensitive. There's the stuff I actually want to do. And then there's stuff that isn't time sensitive.
Yeah.
I always pick from the, I want to do part first. Usually.
Yeah, of course you do. Yeah. I need to make my tasks more descriptive when I send them to you. So I can win your work time with my wittiness. And then
I already know your tactics now, so it's not going to work.
So something else that I think if I was starting over that I would change is that I think I would care less about the trends. And I don't mean the trends as far as what you should do for SEO or email marketing, not the trends that actually build your business. But I think, especially when I was getting started, there were a lot of people getting into content creation in 2008 in 2007. I mean, it was, I feel like it was, that was the beginning of the like explosion.
I mean, there's different explosions of different eras, right? Back then it was the blog explosion. Right. Now I would say it's the podcast explosion. Right?
Yeah. And I think it was really easy in the early days to, instead of focusing on what I was really good at, which was writing, creating content, telling stories, I would get distracted by, oh, someone's posting this and it looks like it's getting a lot of traffic, so I should do something like this, as opposed to basically staying in my lane and creating. Because like the reality is, like, I should have a book, right? I should have a book written, but I don't, because I didn't focus on that. Not that anyone would, not saying that I should, like, everyone should, would want to read my book, but I'm a decent writer. So I had book offers and things like that, but I never did that because it felt like, oh, I don't know, like, I'm still trying to do different things that I feel like now probably weren't as important.
Was a book on part of your plan?
I just dropped, you're like, what are you talking about?
Well, no, I'm saying, like, well, you said you should have done that, but why?
I got approached. I mean, I've been approached multiple times.
Oh, I know. But why would, what would a book do for you? Like, why would you want to do a book?
Because I think deep down, like, I love to write. I love to tell stories. That's really what I like, kind of how you say I'd like to do a SaaS product. I feel the same way about writing. I love to write. I love to talk to people in that way. And I think that would have been something that would have been really fulfilling for me. But I passed on it because sometimes I was chasing other things that weren't as important.
I guess what I'm trying to ask is, it's never too late to write a book. Whereas, well, I feel like my time with the SaaS stuff is probably gone, unless I want to sacrifice. I can do it maybe after the kids go to college, but not right now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And it's not too late, but I'm saying if I had to start all over again, I wouldn't have put it off.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Because I have my own opinions about writing a book. But
yeah, tell me.
Well, I mean, a book's not going to make you money, per se. Especially not your first book, really. Right.
Well, thanks for that boost of confidence.
Well, no, I'm just saying in general, like, writing a book is generally not, I mean, it's good if as a piece of credibility, if you want to sell other things or make a name for yourself, but just writing a book in itself is a lot of work versus the amount of money that you can make. Unless you're already famous, I guess, then you get a pretty big advance.
But I also think in the content creation space, a book is very validating to your brand as far as what people think of you. You think about the people that in the content space. So I'm thinking the Young House Love, they came out with a design home book several years ago, which then I think translated into, like, now they sell lamps at Lowe's, right? That's pretty amazing. And the Home Edit Girls, the organization people, they came out with the book. I think what it does in the content space for a lot of people is it just elevates their status. And so it doesn't make you money directly. I mean, we know people that have made money from books, but what it really does is sort of put you on another level in the content game, because now not only do you have this web property or videos or podcast, whatever it is, you also have this published piece of material that then opens the doors if you want to speak or if you want to do paid, paid speaking.
Are you talking about a traditionally published book?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would also just, I wouldn't shy away from putting a book on Kindle. Self-publishing.
I feel like for some reason, like a Kindle book or a digital book just carries a little bit less weight.
I agree. Than like a traditional link. But I think if you want to write and you want to get yourself out there, then absolutely start there, because if you do a good job, you'll get noticed eventually. It'll give you something to pitch.
All right. So let's switch gears a little bit. Let's just talk about straight money. Okay. you need money. What would you do differently? You need money within 5 years, let's say.
If I need money in 5 years, I still would have started with content. I absolutely would have monetized the YouTube channel, because I feel like I'm totally missed out. I didn't miss out because I can still do it now, but I have a lot of missed opportunity there from the beginning.
So you start with video on YouTube without writing, or would you try to do both?
I would do both. Because we talk about this in another podcast too. I was writing every single day for a really long time, couple of years, 3 or 4 years.
More than a month, huh? Amazing.
I made it more than a month, but one of us has a little more persistence than the other. Don't know who that would be.
Ouch. Okay.
But instead of writing,
I wasn't writing these pieces like, okay, I can't write today. Got nothing to say today.
Riveting. And the SEO on that is just like, don't even talk to me. I would have done maybe 2 posts a week. And then I would have had one of those posts include a video, because that's important. I would, I would use the video to continue to tell the story. And then I would have focused on getting people on the YouTube channel, and I would have monetized the YouTube channel and then continued to grow the website. The other thing I think I would have, I guess I wouldn't redo it, but I'm glad I did it, was the consulting, because I think that was good money. It was hard work, but it was good money. And I think it really educated me on whole nother level of business because I don't have a business background and I've never worked a real job. So a lot of the, okay, for example, like the engineering stuff, I helped a company build an app. And before I did that, I just assumed that if I told an engineer to do something, that they would just give it to me by the next day.
Is this our relationship right now?
Dying inside right now. I didn't have a clear understanding of how a lot of that worked and how all, like, just how corporations work in general, big or small. So I think it benefited me in running my own business. And then especially when I got into e-commerce and I was having to deal with overseas and manufacturing and things like that, I had much different expectations than I did if I would have done it 5 years earlier. What about you?
I think I would still get a job in the beginning just to see whether you like it. And when I say job, I'm talking about like a corporate job, I guess.
Yeah.
And just to see, here's I learned a lot of things actually from working full-time, like the whole structure, the whole hierarchy of how things work, how organizations work, how meetings work, and how not to run meetings, what I liked and what I disliked. And so with that frame of reference, it basically allowed me to figure out how I wanted to design my life. And if I were to ever have employees and whatnot, how to organize things. And I don't think I'd be able to do half of the things that I've been doing with my e-commerce store when I first got started, had I not had my job, actually. I don't know, just like the right way to, even from like a coding perspective, or how I approach things, or how I approach people. Because when I had my job, I would sit in on these sales calls, and I learned a lot from like the salespeople that I interacted with. Certain tactics for persuasion, how to get people to spend more money on software tools and that sort of thing. So it all translates over in like a safe learning environment where you're getting paid no matter what happens.
I totally agree with you. And that's why I'm glad that I did the consulting, because I felt like those things, I learned those things as well. So I'm glad that I did it. And I wouldn't have the opportunity to do it sooner, but I definitely think there was a benefit to having some experience in an office or a business setting. And I think it also, for me, because I've never worked in an office, it made me realize that I don't ever want I don't want to run a big company.
So this is actually a piece of advice that I got in school. Right before I graduated, this mentor told me, you know, get work at a large company, see what it's like first before you pursue a startup company. So back in the day, my original strategy was to join as many startups as possible, get the stock options, like join, work there for 3 years, get all the stock options, and then just move to from startup to startup to startup to startup to increase the chances of one of those companies getting big. And he told me to go with a larger company first to learn the ropes, figure out the right way to do things, and then take that experience into a smaller company. And so I would still advise that you do that first and then go into business by yourself. And if you need money sooner, start with something where you're actually selling something, like some sort of, it doesn't have to be a tangible good. It can be a digital good, but so e-commerce. And then in the long run, I think the best way to have really high barriers to entry where no one can really knock you off is to put out your own content, build your own following, basically build your own personal brand. Having a strong personal brand is probably going to give your business the most longevity, because people can probably knock off my e-commerce store and maybe beat it, but no one can ever take away my personal brand in the long run.
No one can ever take away Steve. That's a unique property. I agree with you. And I think that's one, you said something in there that I think people should think about as well, is that I don't think it's ever too early to create your own product and sell it when you're first getting started. I think people think they have to wait to create something to sell, whether it be a digital product or finding physical products. They think, oh, I want to build an audience and I want to do these other things. And I think if you have an idea for something, you should jump on it and get started, because all of it takes time anyway, and you're going to be able to build as you go. But I think people miss out on a lot of opportunities that way because they think they're not quite ready. And I think you're always ready to create something and sell.
And if you have no idea what you want to sell right now, just start putting out content, building an audience now, and then later on figure out, based on what your audience wants, what you can sell. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.